Pat Stack.
Level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Asor, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thrilled to be with you for the next 2 hours as we cover everything going on with your Winnipeg Jets and in the entirety of the NHL. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is available at IllegalCurve.com. I say good evening to my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, on the mend, on the recovery after a back incident. It's nice to see you upright and looking well on this Wednesday evening.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Drew, and it's good to be here. It wasn't really an incident. It was actually just a nagging back injury that kind of flared up.
Yeah, you and Mike Bossy.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's gotten better. You know, painkillers do a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, and I actually had to go to the emergency room on Saturday. Naomi was nice enough to take me.
That's nice that your wife was considerate enough to take you.
Yeah, but I'm back. So before we get into the hockey, though, I need to know why you shaved, though. That's more important, Drew.
Yes, so I decided that I wanted to change things up a little bit. It had been about 3 years that I had a full beard going on. And
you look like you're 18 years old
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, you know, when I finished and and looked at myself in the mirror, I was sort of... blown away a little bit about how young I looked. I'm not sure if I'll probably grow it back pretty quickly. Just wanted to shave it off and try it again and see how things look. But, every now and then, you know, you gotta keep things fresh. You gotta keep things new. And so I decided to go with it that way. See if my wife still recognized me when I came home clean shaven. And so far, so good. She let me back in the house. My daughter was like, it was sort of funny to watch because she was, knew it was me, but she was a little apprehensive about it because it sounded like me because my voice hasn't changed, obviously, and everything else was the same, except I didn't have this beard, and she's never seen me without a beard. So she was a little bit cautious as to what was going on there, but she came around.
Yeah, you look good, bro. It's definitely slimming.
Thank you very much there, Ezzy. Let's get into the Winnipeg Jets because that's, of course, what we do on this show. They're going to be in action tomorrow night against the Vancouver Canucks to round out the road trip. We'll get to that game later on this hour. The first two games, you know, Saturday night in Calgary certainly didn't go the way they had hoped or the way it seemed like it was going to go after that 3-1 opening period lead. The wheels came off, as has been well documented on this station and on, you know, really throughout the entirety of the NHL, watching the Jets collapse on Saturday night, giving up those 5 unanswered goals to lose on Saturday night. Monday night, Thanksgiving Monday, a team that had really a lot of pressure on them in the Winnipeg Jets, against a team that had Stanley Cup aspirations, and the Jets sort of showed off that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde personality that they've had for so many years. They went into Edmonton. They knock off the Oilers by a 5-2 margin on Monday night, and the team has some good feelings around them because if they'd lost on Monday night, it would be a really different tone surrounding the start to the season. Right now, 1-2, which is what the Jets' record is so much more palatable than 0-3 heading into Thursday night in Vancouver.
Yeah, Drew, it was a very impressive game on Monday night, and you know, you consider that the Edmonton Oilers were coming off of that loss to the Vancouver Canucks, against the Vancouver Canucks, I should say, and really, I think the game against Calgary was so disappointing because the Jets had lost their home opener and allowed 7 goals, so you followed up a 7-goal stinker with allowing 6 goals to the Calgary Flames, and that was without Jaromir Jagr, who's going to make his Calgary Flames debut tonight, so I think the game was so impressive on Monday for a variety of reasons. Connor Hellebuck was excellent in the first period, especially when the Jets were killing that penalty, and I think they had seven shots on that one power play, and it was also the play of Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers, and they combined for 10 points. Obviously, Ehlers gets the hat trick, but that line was matched up against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl's line, not to mention and not forget about Patrick Maroon as well. But
sure, but it's the Draisaitl McDavid line.
Right, and when you keep Connor McDavid to 1 point, he had the one assist on Leon Draisaitl's goal. I mean, that's an accomplishment because Connor McDavid on many nights gets 2 or 3 points. So that top line for the Jets was unbelievable. And it was the way the Jets stayed out of the penalty box and played defensively and without Dustin Byfuglien. So there was a lot going on in that game on Monday night. There was every reason to believe that the Jets were going to lose their third game in a row. And I thought a turning point in that game, the turning point in that game had to be Paul Maurice calls the timeout after Edmonton scores those two quick goals in the second period. And then Nikolaj Ehlers responds really by himself, guys. I mean, that was an individual effort if I've ever seen one. Starts the play off at his own blue line and basically bursts through the neutral zone and has a beautiful shot that beats Cam Talbot. And so it was really impressive that the Jets were able to pick up that win considering they allowed so many goals in the first two games. It was without Dustin Byfuglien, and they stayed out of the penalty box. That was a problem in that Calgary game. They took three penalties in the third period. It was Tanev, Trouba, and I forget who else got the other penalty. It was a defenseman. I can't remember now, but I know Tanev and Trouba took penalties in that third period against Calgary, which really didn't give them an opportunity to come back in that game. So, you know, it's one game. It's only been three games so far, but you really like what, as you said, the Jets did against a Stanley Cup contender.
Well, you know, Sean, that's what makes the Jets so maddening. And this isn't anything new. This is something we've talked about for the last number of years, is that they can look so bad and so lost, you know, like they did in Calgary, at least for the second and third periods in Calgary, and like they did it in the home opener against the Maple Leafs. And then they can come on Monday night against the Oilers and look so solid and defensively responsible, notwithstanding the 40, 50 seconds where the Oilers were able to get the two quick goals to tie it up. But, I mean, that's the just the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personality that, you know, that, you know, Paul Maurice sort of harped on all training camp about trying to get that out of their systems. And they didn't at first for the first couple games, and, you know, they did on Monday. Now, is it permanent? I guess we'll find out tomorrow if this team reverts back to its old ways of being very loose and very irresponsible when it comes to the defensive side of the game.
It really was a tale of two completely different teams that we saw versus Calgary than the one we saw versus Edmonton. Calgary, very individualistic. The team looked slow, second to pucks, lost the majority of puck battles. You know, countless odd man rushes against, going up against Edmonton, tenacious. I don't think Mark Scheifele lost a puck battle that entire game. Mm-hmm. You saw pace. You saw incredible speed on the back check. You saw guys winding up to shut down McDavid. There's one play in particular I'll remember where McDavid was winding up. You know, he likes to circle low below the blue line and gain speed. And Andrew Kopp kind of just circled with him and kind of just pinched him off along the wall. Kopp obviously not responsible for shutting down McDavid all game, but it was just that mentality where you could see that the Jets were not going to allow him to build speed through the neutral zone, which is how Edmonton creates, let's be real, a majority of their offensive chances. And it was just a team buy-in to structure. And you want to talk about structure? How about Tucker Poolman's performance? He looked poised and unbelievable, in my opinion, but it was a really important game just for the Jets' own mentality to know that they could play with the big dogs, they can shut one of the most lethal offensive players down in the league, and to blow the lead the way they did and respond so quickly, I think that was so big for the Jets mentally, just to be able to know that, oh no, here we go again, you know, quick tie up. And now we're going to, if they would have given up a third goal, how would this team have responded? But Nikolaj Ehlers and that line, that driving line, we've heard that a whole bunch of times. Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers, they just kind of took over. They didn't allow the team to sink into that rut that we'd seen the last two games prior. And it was a big mental victory as well for the Jets.
And, Sean, also a big victory because the Edmonton Oilers owned the Jets last year, right?
Yeah, totally.
The Oilers defeated the Jets three times last year, including the Heritage Classic last October. And because we know that the Oilers now aren't going to be just happy getting into the playoffs. This is a team that wants to win the Pacific Division. They want to go far in the playoffs. They almost made it to the Western Conference Final last year. If it wasn't for the Anaheim Ducks, they would have got there, right? So you hope that that translate to tomorrow night in Vancouver, because even though, you know, the Canucks aren't a team that you exactly would put as a playoff contender, it's still a team that has a lot of talent. So
they beat the Oilers on Saturday night. I mean, you mentioned it, right. Off the top, when the Jets lost to the Flames, the Oilers were busy losing to the Canucks.
Well,
which just tells
you
that.
I don't put that much stock into it. Just like I don't put a lot of stock into Vegas winning their first three games.
No, of course not. But it just tells you that on any given night, if you don't match your opponent's energy and you don't match your opponent's effort, because it's not skill. Because, I mean, nobody would argue that the Vancouver Canucks have more skill than the Edmonton Oilers or probably the Winnipeg Jets. Certainly the Winnipeg Jets as well. But if you don't match their energy and you don't match their effort, and we've seen that as a problem for the Jets before, in that, you know, they have a good game in Edmonton, or they have a good game somewhere else, and then their next game is against a quote unquote lesser opponent. They let that lull. And it ends up costing them. You know, they went to Vancouver twice last year. If you recall, they had those back-to-back games in Vancouver in December. Lost them both.
Yeah, and they weren't good against the Pacific Division in general last year, Drew. So you're right. I mean, if the Jets don't pick up 2 points against Vancouver, it's not going to be a successful road trip, right? So you have to get the 2 points because you lost your first two games of the year. So even getting a single point isn't going to cut it. You got to take care of business. You got to beat Vancouver. And I realize they beat Edmonton, and Edmonton's a really good team. But this is a team you should beat. Most people don't have Vancouver as a playoff team. So absolutely, you have to take the positives from Edmonton, but you have to get right back at it tomorrow night in BC.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the Canucks and the Jets later on this hour, but just a quick word on the impact of Nikolaj Ehlers and of the entire top line, which some people have called the Schwelers line, and then, yes, you were trying to get it called the E line.
You don't like the Schwelers name?
I hate the Schwelers line. Oh, and then
I love that name.
The E line. Did you get any good response on your suggestion
that they be called? No, people did not like
people
the E
line. People on Twitter were not a fan.
No, not a fan of you calling it the E line.
So Sean Assor likes the Schwelers line. Most of people in Jetsland like the Schwelers line.
Really? Most people
say.
Do?
It's just fun to say.
I think people like it. I mean, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call it the Shifley Wheeler Ehlers line, it's just easier
just
to say.
Maybe use their names. Right. I mean, that could also work.
Sure.
And it was just a quick word about how impressive they were. I mean, they're a number one line in the NHL, a top five line probably in the NHL. Frank Saravelli did that sort of exercise earlier before the season started, and they weren't necessarily going to line up together. It was, you know, there was some talk it was going to be Perreault up there with Scheifele and with Wheeler, and it ends up now that it's Ehlers with Scheifele and Wheeler. Well, that's a line that is just causes matchup problems left, right, and center for opposition.
Well, Drew, and before the season started, during the preseason, we thought it was going to be Laine up there on the left wing, right? So, I mean, what can you say? I said it earlier. They had 10 points in the game. Ehlers gets the hat trick. I thought that was Nikolaj Ehlers' best game at the NHL level in 3 years. It really was. I mean, his first goal to me was the most impressive. Also, the assist that he got, guys, on Dmitry Kulikov's first period goal, he drew two Edmonton Oilers to him and then made the nice backhand pass to Dmitry Kulikov. So, Sean, Nikolaj Ehlers, what can you say? He was sensational. He was otherworldly. Use whatever adjective you want, whatever superlative you want. That line was simply dominant, and they outplayed, as I said before, the McDavid, Draisaitl, Maroon line. And that's one of the best lines in hockey. So give those guys a lot of credit. Scheifele, Wheeler, those are the leaders of your team. Ehlers is obviously a little bit younger, but those guys stepped up. They got a win. After you lose those first two games of the season, they needed to get that win in Edmonton, and they stepped up. Ehlers specifically was unbelievable. He looked like, you know, the fastest guy on the ice, and that's saying a lot considering McDavid is on the ice too.
Paul Maurice calling it the best two periods that he has seen from Mark Scheifele yet. So the tenacity and the effort didn't go unnoticed from the coach.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the home opener that was last night in Vegas. The Golden Knights with a tremendous debut on home ice, hitting all the right notes with their on-ice performance and with their off-ice salute to first responders in the wake of the Vegas tragedy. We talk about the Golden Knights up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus of Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make your teeth ting like Ezzy's do, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Can Les make my back ting?
I don't know. Probably. He can prescribe drugs, as far as I know.
Say,
I mean,
some sort of
he can make you not feel anything. You know, I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, part of the dentist code. I guess, do dentists have to abide by the Hippocratic Oath also?
I would think so. You'd assume so.
Yeah. So they probably can't just, you know, make your back feel good, you know. You know, I'm not a doctor, Ezzy, but I'll take a look if you want. You're just shaking your head? No? Okay. Last night in Vegas, the Golden Knights, with a tremendous home opener, defeating the Arizona Coyotes on the strength of two first-period James Neal goals. It was a 5-2 victory for the Golden Knights. They absolutely blitzed the Coyotes last night.
Neal's got five now.
Yeah. Does anybody call him the real deal? Did anybody before the last couple weeks call James Neal the real deal?
I don't know, Drew, but now that he's playing for Vegas, he's the real deal.
So you're okay with that as a nickname?
One of my favorite boxers of all time was Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, so there's only one real deal, and that's Evander Holyfield.
You know who's calling him the real deal on Twitter?
Who's that?
Mike Commodore.
Guess later on today. Yeah, Mike Commodore are going to join us in the last hour of the show, so I guess we can talk about that. It was a really great night. I mean, Derek Englund, who is he's sort of an adopted son to Las Vegas. That's where he makes his home now. His wife is from there. His kid was born there. Englund scored last night the second goal for the Golden Knights. Not a guy who typically scores, Englund. I believe he had four goals all last year with the Calgary Flames. So he had a great on-ice contribution in terms of scoring for the Golden Knights. And then in the pregame ceremony, which honored the first responders after the tragic events that have taken place in Vegas, I guess 10 days ago now, he also touched on the right note there. Here's what Derek Englund had to say pregame on the ice, addressing the crowd in Vegas.
Like all of you, I'm proud to call Las Vegas home. I met my wife here, my kids were born here, and I know how special this city is. To all the brave first responders that have worked timelessly and courageously throughout this whole tragedy, we thank you. To the families and friends of the victims, know that we'll do everything we can to help you and our city heal. We are Vegas strong.
Really good message, really strong message, really appropriate message from Derek Englund there last night. And you know, it's sort of weird. You know, Vegas is a sort of what I'll call a transitory city. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes there, they visit, and they leave. You never really think of people who actually live in Vegas and, you know, having the sort of culture and the neighborhoods and what you have in, you know, a city like Winnipeg where people clearly live there. So the Golden Knights appearing on the scene, like if the Golden Knights weren't there, the city of Vegas really wouldn't have an opportunity to rally together in a public venue like that, like we saw last night, because there's no other opportunity. There's no other really professional sports team there. I mean, the Raiders are supposedly coming in a couple years, but other than you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, it's like UNLV football, UNLV basketball, not the same. So to see the emotion of the event last night and then the on-ice performance was a really sort of a touching event in the face of an unspeakable tragedy.
Yeah, Drew, that opening ceremony and first regular season home game was therapeutic for the city of Vegas. And as you mentioned, you know, the victims' family and friends, the first responders. Guys, that was the best opening ceremony I've ever seen in any sport. And I'm obviously a hockey fan, but they nailed it in Vegas. And, you know, when Derek Englund came out and spoke to the crowd and spoke to everyone watching at home, and they had all of the first responders walk out with individual Vegas Golden Knight players. And it was fitting also, I thought, that Derek Englund scored a goal during the game. As you mentioned, Drew, he lives in Vegas. He played some hockey at the East Coast Hockey League level with Vegas. So it was an incredible game. And, you know, the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights are 3-0, nobody expected much out of the Vegas Golden Knights. And obviously, they will eventually lose, and they're a long shot to make the playoffs. But who cares right now? I mean, sure, it's the first week of the NHL season.
It's a great ride right now.
It's a great ride. And, you know, we have the whole Vegas hockey TSN 1290 contest going right now.
Hockey Knights in Vegas.
Yeah, and so it's going to be incredible with the Jets playing Vegas on November 10th. But last night was a special night. It really was. And you knew that Vegas was not going to lose that game. They got out to 3-0 lead. Winnipeg's Brendan Leipzig picked up a couple of assists. So
it was a nice play on the Englund goal.
Yeah, it was a really nice pass, Sean. And
it also helps that they played a team in the Arizona Coyotes that looked just horrendous. I mean, and I know it's too soon.
Well, we knew the Coyotes were going to be bad this year.
Yeah, but did you think that they were going to be? I mean, they looked, and I mean, they sort of played their role well last night, in that their role isn't to play spoiler, because that's not the story that you want. The story that you want is that the Golden Knights, in their inaugural game on home ice, come out and they steamroll their opponents. And the Coyotes were all too willing to sort of play that role, and they played it to a T. I mean, they were down 4-0, 10 minutes and 42 seconds into the first period. At that point in time, the party was on. I mean, the party never stopped. It was a party in the pregame, and then the party continued with the puck drop. And then the party continued as the Golden Knights just pummeled Antti Raanta with 3 goals before in the first 6:15 before he was pulled last night. So the Vegas Golden Knights are not going to be a playoff team. I mean, it's just not, they just don't have the necessary talent. But Gerard Gallant is a hell of an NHL head coach. So that's another team that if you don't respect them and you don't give, you know, the entirety of your effort, they're going to win games. It's just, you know, the reality of the situation is they have too many professionals on their roster, and they have too good of a goalie in Marc-Andre Fleury that they're going to be, a free space on the bingo card.
Right, and even though the Vegas Golden Knights are really a collection of cast-offs from other NHL teams, with all due respect to most of the players, they still have, as you mentioned, a bona fide NHL number one goaltender. James Neal is a multiple-time 20-goal scorer.
Sure.
He's an excellent player, and you've still got some talented players on that team. Yes, it's not going to be a playoff team, but last night, Drew, I don't know if any team was going to get in the way of the Vegas Golden Knights. They weren't just playing for themselves. They were playing for an entire city, an entire state of Nevada, right? So it was really impressive to see the entire team come together with the first responders, the entire organization. As you mentioned, Gerard Gallant, you could see that he was getting teared up there on the bench along with George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon. So give them a lot of credit for that spectacle that they put on yesterday. It was unbelievable. As I said, I thought it was the best opening night ceremony that I've ever seen, pregame ceremony that I've ever seen. And yeah, I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights, they're well coached, and you know that they're going to be a hard team to play against just because they're going to be prepared. And they started to take on an identity, I thought, in that first game. And, you know, you've seen it continue. James Neal now has 5 goals. And you can tell that they're going to play that underdog role for most of the season.
Yeah, you've said it all, but they really just, it was picture perfect. I mean, they commemorated the victims, that 58 seconds. That was an emotional time.
Those 58 seconds. I mean, I was watching at home, and those 58 seconds, when they sort of showed the clock and they did 58 seconds of silence, you couldn't help but get chills.
I was literally, like, almost tearing up. It was so emotional. And then the fact that they made it also about the first responders and the doctors and the police officers, and everyone got to walk down the carpet and get commemorated, you know, get acknowledged by the crowd. It really did just kind of you don't want to say celebrate, but it really brought together everyone that this affected and everyone involved. And it really was just a real, real emotional evening in the desert. And Shane Knighty, a former employee here, obviously, he's the color analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights, throwing it on his Twitter as a 17-year player and broadcaster. I've never experienced emotion and energy in a building like that before. So just goes to show you what it was like there at the T-Mobile Arena.
And you only get to do one first ever regular season home game, right? You only get to do that once.
Yeah,
every
right.
franchise gets to do it once, and they nailed it.
Yeah, they absolutely nailed it. Speaking of nailing it, did you guys see Shane's shoes last night?
Ooh.
Oh, man, are those a pair of shoes that only a former NHLer, you know, and with the gravitas that comes along with that.
And the gold belt?
It can pull off an outfit like Shane was wearing last night.
Those are $500 shoes.
Those are custom made. Those might be $5,000 shoes. Those were a pair of shoes. If you haven't seen them, check it out on Shane's Twitter, the Twitter handle. I don't even know what it is. Shane Knighty? Is that what he is now? I mean, I know what it used to be, Sheriff
TSN. At Shane Knighty.
At Shane Knighty. Go check out the shoes that Shane was wearing last night. That is a pair of kicks, as the kids say, that you're not going to be seeing just every day.
Well, we shouldn't be surprised, guys. He's always been a well-dressed guy.
I know, but those, you know, there's Winnipeg well-dressed, and then, you know, then you see it on Instagram when people go to Vegas and they dress up, you know, to go to the clubs or whatever. You know, Shane took it up a notch last night with those shoes.
Some good shopping in Vegas.
Yeah, some decent shopping there.
Shane's
exactly.
always dressed to impress.
Yeah,
there you go.
Slick guy.
Lisa Dillman of NHL.com was in Vegas for the opener. She's going to join us next. Talk about the Vegas. Talk about some of the other teams she covers on the West Coast. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening. You're listening to TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio here on Pembina Highway. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are thrilled to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Lisa Dillman. Lisa covers the world of the NHL for NHL.com. She was in Vegas last night for the Golden Knights opener. Lisa, good evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be on.
Our pleasure to always have you, Lisa. You know, we spent the last segment talking about the Golden Knights and how it sort of was a pitch-perfect opening ceremony, and then the result on the ice made for a perfect evening altogether. Being in the arena, getting to experience it firsthand, did the emotion that, you know, that we were feeling, you know, watching on TV at home, how did that compare, or how was that, you know, experience live and in the building?
Well, I was saying to somebody today, I can't ever remember being in a building where I felt a mixture of goosebumps and emotion. And, I was wondering if I was going to get to the ceremony with dry eyes. And, it was impossible not to get choked up. And I think what, you know, you guys are feeling when you're watching it, I think everybody, even sitting at home, you could feel it from your, you know, homes.
You know, Lisa, that 58 seconds of silence, as Drew mentioned, we were talking about it last segment, and you could hear a pin drop during that 58 seconds. For you, is that what stood out maybe the most, in addition to Derek Englund's pregame speech?
Yeah, I would think those two moments, and I don't like to necessarily plug our site, but I will. My colleague Nick Konstantinka wrote a terrific column, and he used a device where he italicized the seconds going by, and he said, you know, the weight. I don't think I'm going to capture it completely what he wrote, but he said the weight made you feel like the weight and the enormity of the occasion, because it, you know, yeah, 58 seconds is a very long time, and I think that, which was extremely powerful. A bunch of photographers were behind me way up in the press box, and I wasn't sure why they were shooting from that vantage point, because we really didn't know what was going to happen, and they had been tipped off by the team about the events, and that the names would be flashed on the ice of this of the victims. And that was the best place, the best vantage point for them to shoot down and get the clear shot of the what was happening on the ice with the names. So that I understood why they were all there. And I've seen some of the images that were just incredible. Yeah, and then moving over to Derek Englund, Marc-Andre Fleury said that he had goosebumps during Derek's speech. And this is a guy, you know, I don't know him really well. I dealt with him just a little bit in Calgary, but he's soft-spoken. And he said this afterwards. He says, I don't think I've ever spoken in front of 20 guys in a room, anybody more than 20, you know. And so here it is, 18,000 folks in an arena.
And then you got to feel good for him. He gets teed up by Brendan Leipzig and just blasts one home and score in front of all the fans. I mean, that's got to be a special feeling for him as well, hey?
I know. It was just fitting. His town, his team, you know, he met his wife there. The kids were born there. He's, you know, entrenched in the community. And for him to score was just made a special night even more special.
Well, we're on the topic of goals, so, you know, we'll keep this going. I remember when the Jets scored their first goal here when they relocated back to Winnipeg. It was an extremely emotional experience for everyone involved. Just, you know, Tomas Nosek comes down, a quick release shot, scores the first goal in franchise history. What was that feeling like in the building?
Loud. I mean, you always like to say you can feel the building shake, and you really could. It kept going, and Derek Englund scores, and the James Neal show takes over. But it was loud, and a few words about James Neal. I mean, he has 5 of their 8 goals, and this was a guy who you know, a couple weeks ago they were privately thinking he would not be ready for the start of the season. He had his wrists or his hand and a bone graft on his wrist done, you know, quite late, a lot later than we even knew, July 26th. So he had really been only on the ice for, you know, maybe a week to 10 days before the season opener.
Lisa Dillman, our guest on...
I met his parents. I met his mom and dad. They were at the team store at their training facility that morning shopping and looking at Golden Knights T-shirts and such. And I started chatting with his father thinking, oh, this is great. I'll interview a fan and get some stories ready for later. and he very modestly says, well, my son plays on the team. Oh, who's your son? Oh, James Neal. You know, it was very charming.
He didn't call his son the real deal, though, did he?
No, I was waiting for that.
Okay.
But Mr. Neal, or Peter Neal, very, very, you know, they're from the Toronto area, and it turns out a cottage we spend time at is very close to theirs. So it's a small world when you start talking about lake cottages in Ontario.
There you go. Muskoka's for the win. Lisa Dillman, our guest on NHL This Week, talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, Lisa, you know, 3-0 now for the Golden Knights. They won their first two games on the road before last night's victory at home. And what, you know, jumps out to me is that they're certainly not the most talented team in the NHL, not by a long shot, but with Gerard Gallant behind the bench and with Marc-Andre Fleury in goal, they're not going to be an easy, you know, a bingo space, a free space on the bingo card at any point this season. Just having Gallant's experience and Marc-Andre Fleury's skill, experience, and professional pride, they're going to be a tough challenge night in, night out.
That'll take them a long ways. And you know, and the other thing I've neglected to say they've been doing with this without the person they had penciled in to be the number one center, Vadim Shipachov,
mm-hmm.
and the other kid who was supposed to be their quarterback in the power play, Shea Theodore, who's down in Chicago in the AHL. So they're doing without those two pieces that could potentially bring them more offense. Because let's face it, on nights where James Neal is not scoring, which we haven't seen yet, but at some point he will cool off, and they're going to need some scoring from elsewhere. But I think those two pieces you mentioned, you know, really, you know, give them a fighting chance in every single game.
You know, Lisa, switching over to the Los Angeles Kings, a team that you've covered for many years, we could talk Vegas Golden Knights for probably half an hour or 45 minutes with you. You know, they're off to the 2-0 start. They play the Calgary Flames tonight at home. Jaromir Jagr is going to make his Calgary Flames debut. Is it possible that we've underestimated the Los Angeles Kings? They've looked pretty good the first couple of games.
Oh, I think it is possible. I think it was one of those, you know, when we're asked to do predictions, a lot of folks around the league, including myself, weren't really quite sure where to put the Kings. I think I put slotted them into a wild card spot, and maybe that was, you know, that was unfair. But nobody was really sure which way they would go. I had a feeling there might be a bit of a bump in the John Stevens era, considering he's not Daryl Sutter. And that's no, you know, slam on Daryl. teams need a change, and it was clear that they needed a change in style and temperament, and to bring in a more player-friendly coach. And the other X factor is Jonathan Quick. I mean, if they'd done a movie of last year and just changed one thing where Quick did not get hurt in the opening period of the opening game and had been fine, all these other things probably wouldn't have happened. I don't think you would have seen a change at the general manager's position or the coaching position. And a healthy Jonathan Quick really, I think, gets them in the playoffs.
Lisa, going back to last night, I still want to touch a little bit more on the whole experience down in Vegas. Inside the ring looked crazy, but can you kind of paint us a picture of what was going on outside the venue and just the festivities going around? It looked like a real fan-friendly atmosphere. Yeah, I saw some Cirque du Soleil dancers walking around. Was it really just as Vegas as it could have possibly been?
Oh, yeah, the Blue Man Group. And in fact, next time I see you guys in Winnipeg, I'll show you a picture of one of the guys edging right up to me and throwing some stuff at me. Yeah, he was hilarious. And I was looking at these guys like, wow. They should be at every hockey game. And it was like, it was festive out there. People were signing and sending good messages and messages of support. And you saw fans out there with jerseys from every conceivable team out there. And I think the Golden Knights are going to be a lot of people's second favorite team. You know, you're going to have a Jets fan, and then the number two team will be the Golden Knights potentially. But it was festive. I mean, there is, it's solemn, and people are talking quite a bit about what happened still, and how could they not? But there was the kind of festive atmosphere you see outside a rink on opening night, much less for a team's first game ever at home.
Lisa Dillman, our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Golden Knights and a little bit about the other California-based teams here in the NHL. And Lisa, you mentioned Vadim Shipachov, and he was sort of the big offseason acquisition. The Golden Knights brought him in from the KHL, a two-year, $9 million contract. But it sounds like they're denying rumors that he wants to jump ship back to the KHL. Sounds like there's a little bit of upheaval right now with Shipachov and the Golden Knights. What's going on with that situation?
Well, my colleague Nick Konstantinka again reported on this earlier in the week. We've sort of been taking turns spending time in Vegas, and we might have to declare residency.
I'm sure you guys are really fighting over that one. Really, it's a real difficult fight. I bet.
I'm going back there Friday for their next two games. So,
do you need an assistant or anything?
it's quite a story. But back to your question, I think what happens is his English is not great. I think they're. From what I've read and talked to people and what Nick has reported, I think there was I don't think there was a clear understanding of what the situation was, that the player and the group around him needed to know that this wasn't a performance-based issue. This was a roster situation where George McPhee still has to make a couple more moves, and then people are waiting for him, and he's not in any hurry. He's looking for the future. He's not going to squander an asset to just make a move. So. Shipachov is in, I believe, Vegas still. I don't think things have changed in the last day. He's not playing in Chicago. He's working out on his own. So I'll be very curious to see what happens and when it happens, because this is a guy, they put a substantial investment in, and he wanted to play in the NHL. He came over and was on their number one line through all of preseason.
Lisa, were you surprised that the Vegas Golden Knights acquired Malcolm Subban and then lost Calvin Picard to the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I was very surprised, because what I heard all summer and being around them, I was at the rookie camp and the development camp and whatnot, and I never heard anything that they were going to tinker with their goaltending situation. So I have to admit, I was surprised. I was with the Kings or the Ducks, and I was not in Vegas when they did make that move, but I was surprised. And one less, isn't he from Winnipeg originally?
That is correct, he is.
Yeah, trains with that. They have quite a group of players. All I've been doing is writing about players from Winnipeg lately. I worked on a big Nolan Patrick feature that ran over the weekend.
Well, there you go. There's worse things to do than spend time talking to some good old Winnipeggers, of course. Nolan, of course, former Brandon Wheat King as well. Lisa, I'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned that, sort of with Shipachov, there's a roster glut. There's too many players for the roles. That's why Shea Theodore is down with the Chicago Wolves as well. Did George McPhee sort of give any sort of timeline as to when he wants to clear up this glut of players? Because we know that they had so many defensemen right off the expansion draft, and he still hasn't really made the necessary moves to free up the roster spaces.
No, he hasn't, and you know, I'll have to ask him again when I see him when I'm there in a couple of days. But you know, I don't think he's in any rush. I mean, the general managers and his, you know, the George and his staff, they're in the position of, yeah, of course they want to win now, and I'm sure they're thrilled with what's going on. How could they not be? And coaches, and they want to win now. So you have those two competing interests. So I don't think George, he's very consistently, like he was told me, he wasn't going to rush Cody Glass. He wasn't going to rush any of his kids. And I also don't think he's going to, you know, push or rush into any moves until he gets the deal that he wants. And I should have known. Shea Theodore told me over the summer that I said, oh, where are you living? Did you get a place? And he looked at me sort of surprised and said, oh, no, I didn't. So it's almost like in the back of the head, he knew he could possibly be starting the season in Chicago.
Lisa Dillman is with NHL.com. She covered last night's Vegas opening night, and you can also read a lot of her other features and work at NHL.com. Lisa, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you again soon. Take care, Lisa.
Take care.
When we come back, we preview the Jets and the Canucks tomorrow night in Vancouver. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big thanks to Lisa Dillman for joining us, setting the scene on what it was like to be in Vegas last night for the home opener. You certainly know that there's going to be a lot of Jets fans in Vegas coming up just over a month from now, or just under a month from now, Friday, November 10th. The Jets and the Vegas Golden Knights, of course. That's the Hockey Knights in Vegas, the contest we're running here at the station. So, you know, still have an opportunity to get in on that contest. Keep it tuned here to TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Jets and the Canucks tomorrow night, a 9 p.m. puck drop. I'm going to have to take a nap sometime to stay awake after the, you know, sometime before the, after the kids go to bed, but before the game starts, maybe catch a few Z's there and, you know, make sure I can stay up until midnight to watch that game. But Canucks 1-0-1 so far on the season. And I think the storyline out of Vancouver is new head coach Travis Green and the deployment of the Sedin twins through the first two games of the season. I mean, we're so used to this team being run through Daniel and Henrik. Well, so far through two games, they're 7th and 8th, respectively, among forwards in time on ice. So you really do get the impression, no surprise, and probably overdue, that the changing of the guard is happening in Vancouver as it relates to the young players and the Sedins.
Yeah, the changing of the guard, though, Sean's a Vancouver Canucks fan, the changing of the guard has been happening for several years now. It's not just starting now. Right. And Henrik Sedin is still leading the Canucks in points after a couple games, and that doesn't mean much now, but I would expect Henrik Sedin and Daniel Sedin to still be top five on the team in scoring, guys. But let's be honest, it's really now Bo Horvat's team. Mm-hmm. He got the big contract in the offseason. But listen, I mean, the Vancouver Canucks could easily be 2-0 right now. The game last night went to a shootout. Alex Burrows obviously plays the role of spoiler, coming back to the city where he played for 10 plus years, but this
got a,
Vancouver
got a nice ovation there as well.
Yeah, a nice little ceremony.
Yeah, and he deserves it. Yeah. Alex Burrows
undrafted,
had a lot of success there. Yep, yeah. Played for the Manitoba Moose. So when you're talking about the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, there just isn't enough talent on this roster, in my opinion, to be a playoff team, especially in a competitive Pacific Division. And we know that the Central Division is possibly going to produce five playoff teams in the Western Conference, right? So, I mean, they're not an easy team to play against, obviously, and the goaltending is, I would say, not as good as it once was. But when you're talking about Bo Horvat, he's still listed as the second-line center. But really, we know that he's the top-line center on this team. And Henrik Sedin is obviously centering that line with Daniel Sedin and Thomas Vanek. But if you've watched the Canucks' first two games, and I have, I mean, Thomas Vanek is the same old Thomas Vanek, kind of floating around, still getting his odd goal here and there. But I also just don't think this team is good enough on the back end. You think about that team back in 2011. 7 that went to the Stanley Cup final against the Boston Bruins. It just isn't the same defense there. And it's obviously got the ability to move the puck there with Alex Edler and Chris Tanev, and Troy Stetcher is a good player out of the University of North Dakota. But, I mean, this guy's isn't a team that we should expect to light the house on fire this season. But, hey, they've started off pretty good here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are good at home. But this just... it's not a very quick team. It's a team that gives up too many shots. They gave up 42 shots against the Ottawa Senators. And again, if you watch that game, I think they were lucky to take that game to the shootout, but they did. Jacob Markstrom played really well. So, I mean, the Jets have a real good opportunity here to win two games in a row against a team that on paper they should beat.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, that's you know, what makes this game tomorrow so, I mean, important is all of a sudden if you come home and you've won 2 out of 3 on the road trip, and you're 2-2. Well, the terrible start to the season, the loss to Toronto, and then the embarrassing result against the Flames after being down, after being up 3-1, you feel a lot better about yourself. Nobody's talking about that anymore. All of a sudden, you're back to 500. You know, after 4 games, albeit, but you know, you're feeling better about yourself. You lose to Vancouver, the team you should beat, and you're 1-3, and then your schedule. I mean, there's only 2 games in the month of October that are against teams that were not playoff teams last year. And that's tomorrow night against Vancouver, and then Saturday night against Carolina. And everybody thinks the Carolina Hurricanes are an up-and-coming team that's likely to be a playoff team this year. So this was the easiest game in your month of October. So you better take advantage of it. Otherwise, you're 1-3 with a very difficult schedule ahead of yourself for the rest of the month.
Yeah, and we talked about the Canucks, the Sedins, and we talked about Thomas Vanek and Bo Horvat. I mean, they have other players that can put the puck in the net. I mean, Marcus Granlund's a pretty good player. Brandon Sutter has started off the season pretty well. He obviously hasn't been the second-line center that they expected. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam Gagne, Jake Virtanen. But, I mean, when you compare this team's top nine to the Edmonton Oilers' top nine or the Toronto Maple Leafs' top nine, basically, if you shut down that Sedin line and the Horvat line, I mean, that bottom six leaves a lot to be desired.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have Derek Dorsett playing big roles, Alex Burmistrov, who, you know, former, of course, Jet here. I mean, you have Sam Gagne, who they signed to a fairly sizable contract in the offseason that people were still scratching their heads about. They're in the midst of a rebuild.
The biggest surprise to me so far is Brock Besser can't get in the lineup. And many people were picking Brock Besser as a Calder Trophy favorite.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, you know, someone who was going to have a good rookie year after kind of showing us a little bit last year after his career at the University of North Dakota.
And the preseason.
He can't get into the lineup.
Mm-hmm. And he had a great preseason, too. Showed he could score at the NHL level. Sorry to cut you off there, Ezzy. But, yeah, it's really interesting when you look at, you know, an aging forward group and the transition of the young with Bo Horvat kind of taking more of a leadership role. And then this college kid, Brock Besser, comes in and has a good conclusion to the season, and then he kicks off the season, the preseason, pardon me, with a real flash of some ability to score, and not from even in close, you know, showing a good shot that fools goaltenders from far away. And yeah, he can't get in the lineup, so there's some obviously maybe some trust issues defensively, or maybe something Travis Green saw that isn't conducive to helping an aging veteran team be productive. But yeah, that's interesting for sure.
And Sean, we've got Mike Holford coming up, so we'll ask him if Brock Besser is going to get into the lineup. But I mean, he signed his entry level deal, so he's not going back to college hockey. Yeah. It's either AHL or NHL, and I can't see them sending Brock Besser down to the AHL just because he's a first round pick from back in 2015, and he's just got so much offensive upside. You wonder if there are some comparisons to be made with Kyle Connor. I think Brock Besser's upside maybe is a little bit higher, but Kyle Connor, I mean, we know what he did at the University of Michigan. So as Sean said, maybe Travis Green has seen some flaws in his defensive game, but
Not playing him at all, though, doesn't really solve that problem.
Well, exactly. I mean, He has to play. So if Brock Besser doesn't play tomorrow night against the Jets, you got to get him into the lineup sometime in the next week.
From the Jets' perspective, it was announced that Dustin Byfuglien will miss his second consecutive game with a soft tissue lower body injury, which means we're going to see Tucker Poolman remain in the lineup. So the Jets' lineup, by the sounds of it, is going to be exactly the same as it was in Edmonton. Matt Hendricks, he skated traded today, but it doesn't sound like he's going to make his debut in the Jets lineup. And Connor Hellebuck is going to get the start in goal for the Winnipeg Jets.
And Hellebuck should get the start. Absolutely. I mean, none of us are going to argue with that.
Nope. Not for a second.
He was the first star of that game. I don't know if he ended up getting the first star. He should have got the first star. Probably Nikolaj Ehlers actually,
I think,
got the first star. But for me, it was the way Hellebuck played in the first period that kept the Jets in it and obviously allowed them to hold that 2-0 lead going into the second period.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to Buff, I mean, we know that, you know, Buff hasn't practiced. He didn't practice today. They practice at the University of British Columbia. So it's no surprise that he isn't going to play. And, you know, as far as Tucker Poolman, Drew, goes, he played 14 minutes. Him and Toby Enstrom were a formidable pair.
Mm-hmm.
Their possession numbers were excellent.
Of course, he was terrific. Best on the team.
And the Jets' possession numbers were excellent. And Edmonton's a great possession team. So that's saying a lot. And we knew that Tucker Poolman was coming into the season having more experience than your average defenseman, right? Being 24 years old, playing 3 years at the University of North Dakota. But, I mean, that was an excellent debut for him.
Yeah, no, it absolutely was. So it'll be, you know, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which is a good problem for the Jets to have at the current state. The question becomes, if Tucker Poolman continues to play as well as he's been playing, when Byfuglien is back to being healthy, which isn't going to be a long time because this is just a minor lower body injury, what happens? You know, who is the odd man out on the Jets defense? And that's sort of the question that's hovering over everything as where we're at in this point in the season.
Yeah, and, you know, good for Tucker Poolman, and it's not so good for Ben Chiarot, who was a regular the last couple years with the Jets, played 60 games last year, 70 games the year before. And unfortunately, the way Tucker Poolman's playing, Sean, I just don't think Ben Chiarot is going to get into the lineup
soon. Not until the Jets have two injuries. I mean, that's really going to be the impetus for Ben Chiarot to be in the lineup. It makes you wonder, though, that if Poolman continues to play well, at some point in time, do they try and keep him in the lineup by maybe giving Tyler Myers a day off or a game off just to make sure there's no problems, you know, with his injury troubles over the past 12 months, something like that?
Well, it's possible, but then you have to factor in that Tucker Poolman can play both sides, right? He can play on the left side as well. Mm-hmm. We saw that in the preseason, but just wanted to throw that in there because, you know, Ben Chiarot was a guy who you expected to be out there every night if he was healthy in the top six, but
last year,
now with the emergence of Tucker Poolman,
that job has been stolen.
Yeah. Just quickly, there's people apparently on Twitter, God bless them, freaking out about the fact that Byfuglien went sturgeon fishing today on the Fraser River because he's injured and so he shouldn't be.
Was that a sturgeon or a dinosaur?
Those things
are monstrous.
How long was that thing? Like 100 feet?
I don't know, but that's what Andrew Ladd has that big fundraiser out in BC in the off season every year.
I assume that's how they kind of knew about that.
Yeah, sturgeon slayers or something is
Drew,
what
you've
it's called.
You've caught a sturgeon before, haven't you?
I haven't actually. I've you know, I think I picked up some food on sturgeon. Sturgeon Avenue or Sturgeon Road, whatever it might be.
Well, I know you didn't go to Sturgeon Heights.
I didn't go to Sturgeon. Well, it was Sturgeon Creek back in the day. It was only recently that it's been Sturgeon Heights. Didn't they combine Silver Heights and Sturgeon Creek into Sturgeon Heights?
I don't venture that far.
Silver Heights, that's a great restaurant.
Yeah, it's
good
also,
ribs.
Also
yeah,
used to be a school.
Ribs.
Anyways, just so
they're
we're clear.
They're not a sponsor, are they?
No, I don't think so. Just so we're clear, nobody has a problem with Byfuglien sturgeon fishing and that people who do can.
It's a mandatory day off. Those guys can do whatever they want, so why would you have a problem with that?
Well,
what are they supposed to be doing, playing chess?
Well, and he got his. No, they're upset because he, you know, he's injured, so he got his treatment in the morning.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
I mean, I started fishing a couple of years back because Naomi's family's really big into fishing.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I mean, you can have a beer in one hand and you can have a smoke in the other hand. It's not exactly like you're exerting yourself big time physically fishing.
Yeah, and
you're sitting in a boat. One of those sturgeon.
Yeah, you weren't fishing for sturgeon.
No, I mean, well, you know, most of the time you're fishing for pickerel or smallmouth bass.
Oh.
I will say this, reeling in a big fish like that is very tiring.
Oh, I'm a master angler.
You know what? You're a master something.
I actually am a master angler.
Well, you know, I'm glad you're a master angler because you used to be a master something else and we're not even going to talk about that.
What were we trying to say there, Drew? Master of ceremonies?
Mike Halford of TSN 1040 and theathletic.com in Vancouver is up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hey, Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your texts to 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN 1040 in Vancouver and TheAthletic.com in Vancouver, we're pleased to welcome to the program Mike Halford. Mike, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Mike. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Canucks, as the Jets and the Canucks will do battle tomorrow night in Vancouver. The Jets looking for their second victory on the season. The Canucks looking for their second victory as well. 1-0-1 to start. So far, so good, I guess, for the Canucks, a team that doesn't really have any expectations on them this year, as it's clearly, they finally have more or less clearly declared that the rebuilding process, a process, mind you, that many felt should have started a few years ago, is finally underway in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's been a good start, actually. The game against Edmonton the season over on Saturday at Rogers Arena was great. It was played, very high speed. The Canucks showed a lot more in those 60 minutes than they had really throughout the entire second half of last season, which was largely, it was part of the rebuild, and it was understood that there were going to be some lumps before they got better. But the way that they lost and the team that they iced last year, especially over the final 3 months of the season, it just left a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Ticket-buying fans didn't want to see a team comprised of half AHLers and kids that were probably never going to pan out at the NHL level. And the way that they lost, they didn't have a lot of energy. They played a passive game, didn't score a lot of goals. So you look at a good win against Edmonton in the first game. Last night's game was a bit of a setback. I didn't think they played especially well against Ottawa, but still got a point out of the deal. And now they go into this game against Winnipeg where they've got a little bit of a chip on their shoulders, actually. They practiced today when didn't think that they would. A lot of people pointed to Travis Green, the new head coach, not being all that happy with the Canucks after yesterday's performance. So I'm really intrigued to see what happens on Thursday against the Jets.
Mike, why can't Brock Besser get into the lineup? And is there a chance that Besser spends some time in the American Hockey League?
There is a chance that he'll be in the American League this year. I don't doubt that. I think Travis Green is already on record saying that him and Jake Virtanen may only end up playing 50 or 60 games. This is sort of a organizational credo or mantra that they want to embrace, and that minutes at this level are supposed to be earned, not given. And that was another problem that they had last year, is they had a lot of guys that, some of them aren't even on the NHL roster right now, they're in the American League, that they didn't really get that sense of having to earn it, because there just wasn't the depth in the organization. Guys were granted a lot of things at an early age, and they want to be an organization now where guys have to fight and claw to get out of the AHL to get to the NHL. And in the case of Besser, there was a dangling carrot in training camp that he could make the team, which he did. And then he kind of tired and looked a little lethargic near the end. So they're saying, okay, you spent a lot of energy trying to make this team. Take a step out of the lineup and work your way back in. Now, do I agree with the approach? Not particularly. I kind of wonder what Brock Besser thinks about this when he looks around and sees a lot of his North Dakota teammates, including Tucker Poolman in Winnipeg, who are getting sniffs at the NHL level while he's in the press box. But for better or for worse, this is the Canucks. What they want to do is they want to set a culture, to use that time-honored cliche, and they want to do it now, and they want to do it with their young guys. And I guess for the first two games, Brock Besser is a casualty. Now, it looks like he's going to draw in tomorrow. Today's skate, he was in Virtanen's spot. So it does look like Besser could be making his season debut tomorrow against the Jets.
Mike, just looking at the D-core in Vancouver now, and a lot of minutes handing out to newcomer Michael Delzato. What have you seen out of him on the back end? And he appears to be quite the minute muncher so far for the Canucks.
Yeah, he played almost 25 last night against Ottawa, which was a lot. And, Travis Green, the new head coach, has danced around who's going to be his big minute guy. It was Alex Edler in the game against Edmonton. Tanev gets a healthy dose. The only guys that are really cut back noticeably is that pairing of Stetcher and Ben Hutton. And Delzato was brought in primarily to improve the puck-moving abilities of this blue line. Because you think back to last year, and Nikita Triamkin, who's now in Russia, was not a very good puck mover. He iced the puck a whole heck of a lot. Lucas Pisa, who's now with Vegas, was not a good puck mover. So Delzato was brought in to increase the speed game and increase the transition game, and I think he's been a pretty good fit. Delzato has his warts. I think that's pretty well established. There's a reason he's bounced around as much as he has in his NHL career, but he's looked good in a very small sample size. And I would not be surprised if Travis Green leans on him a little bit more and gives him the heavy minutes, because, again, Green's trying to figure things out, too. He's coached all of 2 games in the NHL, so he's trying to get his feel for things. And I wouldn't be surprised if, one, Delzato keeps getting the big minutes, but, two, you see him transition through. And I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Pouliot gets in a game, too, as well pretty soon. I mean, that was the guy that they traded for to acquire from Pittsburgh during the preseason. I think they want to give him a look as well. So there's still a lot of permutations and mixes that they can do on defense.
Mike Halford, our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Canucks as the Jets and the Canucks will do battle tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290, also available on TSN 3. Mike, you mentioned time on ice for the defensemen. How about time on ice for the forwards? You got to go down to number 7 and number 8 among the forward group to find Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin, respectively, with 14:46 and 14:45 of ice time through the first 2 games. Is that going to be a season-long phenomenon that you see them sort of, I don't want to say phased out, but maybe see their ice time cut a little bit in favor of the younger players?
It will be season-long. I would replace the word phenomenon with saga, storyline, narrative. It's not going to go away, and this is eventually they were going to have to transition away from the Sedins being frontline players, and it seems like now is the time. They are getting very limited looks at evens. They're getting a lot of looks. They're almost becoming power play specialists at this stage of the game. And at even strength minutes, they're, you know, getting not a lot of looks. I think part of that is to conserve their energy so they can be effective with the man advantage. I think the other part of it is that they just can't give you what they were giving last year. I think part of the coaching change was that Willie Desjardins was very complimentary of his veteran guys. He was very protective of them, and he would always defer to them, especially the Sedins, because he had such respect for their games, but he also overplayed them. The Sedins were playing way too much last year, and it wasn't even fair to them. I mean, these guys have been tremendous foot soldiers, but they're 37. They've logged extensive time. They've got a lot of miles in the odometer, and they've played games for a long time in the NHL where they've taken a lot of physical abuse because they're not speedsters. They're going to play the down-low cycle games. So they're getting old, and they're older. And, you know, you look at the time on ice right now, Besser, when he gets in the lineup, I imagine he'll see a healthy dose. The future is already there with Horvat. You're seeing Barchi get extended looks. You're seeing Michael Granlund get extended looks. Vertanen starting to get some extended looks. This is the future of the organization. Eventually, they were going to have to transition away from the Sedins. You're seeing it happen now. But that doesn't mean that it's going to make it any easier on any parties. I think the Sedins will eventually get tired of fielding questions about it. I also think Travis Green will get tired of fielding questions about it. But the questions will be there all year, because this is going to happen all year.
Mike, this is a Winnipeg-based hockey show, and I realize it's only been 2 games, but how has the Alexander Burmistrov era been so far in Vancouver?
Okay, there are some people that subscribe to the theory that if Burmistrov is on your team, you don't have a very good team. And I think there's something to that, is that there's probably only a handful of teams where he would be a regular right now. And I don't think Winnipeg would be one of them, to be perfectly honest. I think there's a reason he kind of played his way out of Winnipeg. I just don't think he's good enough. He's been okay. He hasn't really done anything to jump off the page. We thought he might be the guy to come out of the lineup when Besser went in. He's not. He's kind of done the things that you would expect a guy to survive and stay in the lineup in a bottom six role. He's been okay in almost all facets. He's got some versatility, which I think is helping him out. He can play down the middle, he can play outside, and he can do things on special teams that allow him to find his minutes. But Travis Green even said, everyone was good in the first game against Edmonton, and everybody was, and that was Burmistrov included. And Burmistrov was a little bit invisible in that second game. I don't think they have exceptionally high hopes for Burmistrov. There's a reason he was signed to the contract that he was. It was a 1-year deal, under $1 million, so it was a low-risk, low-reward type thing. I think if he shows relatively well, he'll be one of the guys dangled at the deadline. I do not expect the Burmistrov era in Vancouver to last much beyond this year, but I think that was by design. I think if he plays well, they can recoup an asset. If he doesn't play well, then it's no harm, no foul. And that's kind of how I see it playing out.
Mike, just reading some reports thus far into the season and the players for the Canucks saying that this new system that Travis Green is implementing is kind of more conducive to the squad they have and some of the players on their roster. And I'm just curious. I know it's early. You touched on maybe a less allegiance to veterans, but what differences or what are some of the changes you've seen in the system structure of the Canucks just from Willie DeJardin to Travis Green now?
Simpler, faster, and straighter, basically. They're a more straight-line team. I think Willie's system that he put in last year created a little bit of confusion because it wasn't, you know, under Green right now, they have almost a set play where the forwards are the guys carrying the pucks. Will flip a puck in and chase it themselves and try and gain possession that way. Not a dump in, but a flip into open space where they can kind of skate onto it. And that's something that you just didn't see under Willie. Willie's system was a little bit more designed to be in a passive shell to keep teams to the outside and then hope that Ryan Miller could stop enough shots so that they could remain competitive. There's pinches. There's a little bit more of an aggressive forecheck. Now, this is going to come back to bite them eventually because the Canucks aren't very talented. And they've got some young guys that are learning, so they're going to take their lumps with this. But it makes for a more exciting style. Like the game that they played against Edmonton on Saturday couldn't have been played last year because they didn't have the personnel and they didn't have the system in place. Now they've got the personnel. They're a little bit younger. They're a little bit faster. Guys like Gagne and Burmistrov aren't burners per se, but they're shifty and they're skillful, and they give you the impression that they can play at a higher tempo. And that's even a big thing because this team was plodding last year, and they're not now.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. You just mentioned Sam Gagne. He got the 3-year contract in the offseason, $3.15 million per season. What are the expectations for Sam Gagne? He had a good year last year. He's 28 years old. He's sort of been a bit of a journeyman the last few seasons in the NHL. What are reasonable expectations? What are the Canucks hoping to get from Sam Gagne in the course of, well, this season and then the two more after it?
Well, I think the big thing was they want him to help on the power play. That's where he made his bones last year in Columbus. And he had worked with Newell Brown on the power play in Arizona together. And now Newell Brown, of course, is coaching the power play in Vancouver. So the hope was that Gagne would come in and would bolster a power play that was dreadful last year. 29th in the NHL. It stunk. And so far, it hasn't been great. They're 1-for-11 on the power play. The thing is Gagne is not a sniper. He's not a shooter, which is what this team badly needs. He's a creative guy that can make things happen. Also his versatility. I talked about it with Burmistrov. They like that Gagne can play the middle and the wing. And don't forget, he put up those points in Columbus last year, largely playing on a fourth line. So there's some real versatility to him. That's what they're hoping. So far, I think like everyone else, he's been good, not great. But there's some promising signs. And I think eventually, you know, they'll find a more defined role for him. Right now, he's kind of bouncing all over the place. And that's not necessarily such a bad thing. Because, again, they did sign him to be versatile.
Mike Halford is with TSN 1040 in Vancouver. You can also read his work at theathletic.com in Vancouver. Mike, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Mike, tell Burmy we said hi.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, we'll do. I'll pass along a message, guys.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much.
Bye. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Joel Quenneville, Chicago Blackhawks coach, calls the face-off violation situation in the NHL an epidemic. We talk about his comments next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Mike Halford joining us to talk about the Canucks. In case you missed any of that segment, in case you missed any of the show, in case you missed any of our shows, simply subscribe to the show via iTunes, via Google Play, however you want to do so. Get it sent to your device each and every week. It's the easiest way to do it. What are you waiting for? Just go do it right now. I'll wait. Are you done? Anyways, this segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can also check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. You can see the operation in action. And let me tell you, it is an operation. I went there a couple weeks ago, popped in to see my boys. They have some fascinating – it's a fascinating operation to watch your jersey being made with the specifications and as – I mean, the precision that it's made with is really fantastic. You can check it out, Keener Jerseys, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
I want a Vegas Golden Knights Brendan Leipzig jersey.
There you go. Boom.
You can get it.
They can do it for you. I like the Golden Knights.
The Winnipeg connection, by the way, on the Golden Knights is the best.
Well, sure. You got, I mean, it starts up at the top with Kelly McCrimmon.
Yep.
And then, I mean, you know, I guess we have to take, can we say that Lawless is from Thunder Bay now? Or do we still have to acknowledge that he's from Winnipeg?
He's an honorary Winnipeg.
Okay, fine. I guess Lawless.
He earned his stripes.
Fine, here. Lawless, I guess. You know, Knighty, Brendan Leipzig. There's no shortage of
Cody Eakin.
Cody Eakin.
Cody Glass.
Yeah, Cody Glass. Yeah, there's the Codys, the two Codys. I mean, my two Codys. And, you know, I think it's a great 1980s sitcom, if I recall correctly. Lots of Winnipeg ties to the Golden Knights, of course. And so, you know, I like this jersey. I think they're sharp jerseys.
Yeah, they look nice on the screen. You know, sometimes you see them in person, it's different than the way they project on TV. It's a real sharp looking outfit.
I agree wholeheartedly with you there. Chicago Blackhawks head coach Joel Quenneville calling the NHL's crackdown on faceoff violations an epidemic. You know, I'll read the quote from Quenneville in a minute here, but for now. After having watched, you know, each team's played a couple games, two, three games. I think maybe one team has even played four games at this point in the season. Yes, so the Blackhawks and the Blues and the Flyers have each played four games, the Canadiens too. You know, your thoughts on the face-off violation situation. Is it an epidemic as per Joel Quenneville?
Well, it's obviously an epidemic for Quenneville, but, yeah. I mean, let's be honest here. I don't think this is going to last. And I think Sean will agree here, centers are going to cheat any way they can. So right. I don't think they're going to be as hard on these players as the season goes along. But what happened, Drew, was Monday night's game, I don't know if you guys caught the game or caught the highlights, Toronto won that game in overtime, and Jonathan Toews, who is one of the best faceoff guys in the league, has been for many years, probably for about 6 or 7 years now, he gets kicked out of the circle. Brent Seabrook actually has to come in. Obviously, Seabrook, for those who don't know, is a defenseman, has to come in and take the draw. He loses the draw. And in that game, there were 11 different players who took faceoffs. Usually, you expect maybe 5 or 6 different players.
Yeah.
You know, 4 centers plus, you know, the odd winger will come in and take a draw. But when you have 11 different players taking faceoffs, that's not a good thing. But it was really that game Monday night against Toronto, Drew, and it was written about on TSN.ca, so go check it out. Maybe we'll link out the article. But it was really that game that I think ticked Joel Quenneville off. And, you know, we've seen that here in Winnipeg throughout the preseason and in the regular season, obviously. There's only been one regular season game so far. We're going to see another one on Saturday. But I think the NHL might have gone a little bit too far with calling these face-off infractions, because the reality is, I mean, these guys are going to find ways to cheat, Sean.
Yeah, and I mean, would Joel Quenneville have used the word epidemic if the role was reversed and Nikita Zaitsev had to come in overtime and take a face-off and they lost and Patrick Kane goes down the other way and scores? Probably not. He was obviously cheesed and emotional about the fact that, you know, that his number one face-off man, someone who's known around the league, and Jonathan Toews as someone who is one of the top face-off men in the league, someone who I'm sure has built up a bag of tips and tricks over the years, many of which were probably against the rules that are being called now. And so all of a sudden, his top centerman and his top faceoff man might have to adjust and learn some new tips and tricks. So
let me interrupt you for a second, though, Sean. Given the circumstances, it's 3-on-3 overtime. Toews knows who he's on the ice with. It's a defensive zone draw. Mm-hmm. He's on the ice clearly with two other, with not two forwards, but two defensemen. Isn't it to some extent incumbent on Jonathan Toews in that situation to not cheat? Know the situation that you're in, and if you're Jonathan Toews and you're one of the top faceoff men in the league, shouldn't you be able to at least win or scrum the draw as much as possible and not even risk getting thrown out to bring in a defenseman in that situation?
But I think the issue, guys, is that Jonathan Toews is used to taking faceoffs a certain way, right? And now they're introducing this new system where you basically have to take a step back and you're not able to kind of cheat a little bit and get into closer to that circle. And, you know, we should also mention, too, I meant to mention this earlier, Brandon Saad went 0 for 8.
Yeah, 0 for 8.
in faceoffs. He's obviously a winger on Jonathan Toews' line. So that's what had Quenneville so upset. He was losing puck possession to the Toronto Maple Leafs with defensemen. And Brent Seabrook wasn't even the only defenseman to lose a faceoff. Gustav Forsling also had to take a faceoff. When you have defensemen taking faceoffs, I mean, I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
Here's the direct quote from Joel Quenneville. Tonight was an epidemic for sure. Right off the bat, I don't know what was the number, but I think Captain Jonathan Toews got tossed about 9 times. Right now, the officials don't tell you why. So that's the part. It's tough on centermen, certainly frustrating for Johnny, and Nazem Kadri was doing the same thing, you know? I don't think they quite understood the reason why, and that's a work in progress, finding out why you're getting tossed without an answer.
Okay, hold on a second, though, Drew. The fact that Jonathan Toews was kicked out of the faceoff circle 9 times, doesn't that answer your question right there? What I mean by that is Toews is one of the best faceoff guys in the league. I would throw Ryan Kessler in there as well.
Sure.
So if one of the best faceoff guys in the league is having trouble getting used to the new rules, doesn't that mean that you've gone too far?
Well, or he's been cheating successfully for so many years.
They all cheat. I mean, anybody who's played hockey knows you do whatever you have to do. Yeah. You lift the guy's stick, you kick the guy's skate, whatever you have to do. You're trying to win the faceoff.
And they're saying that it's an issue with the referee's safety. They don't want the skates near behind the referee's legs. I was reading into it. I believe that same article.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're saying that it's a safety issue for the referees with the skates. All right.
I think they have to ease up on this. I think
they do.
When you talk about, you know, these face-off infractions, I mean, if anything, early on in the season, Drew, they should be giving these players warnings.
Or explanations.
I mean, just think about that. 9 times he was kicked out of the face-off circle. Like, that's ridiculous to me.
It does seem excessive. I don't deny that. I mean, I think what I take more of an issue with is that they're not, at least according to Joel Quenneville in that quote, is that they're not providing an explanation to the players. Now, I know it's hard to do in the course of the game flow, and you're not going to, you know, interrupt the players to pull out a whiteboard and say, this is what you did wrong.
TV timeout, just skate over quickly, just say, listen.
These guys chat constantly throughout the game on the ice. So I think that, you know, it is incumbent on the linesman to maybe provide more of an explanation as to what specifically they violated. But these guys, the players know that they're cheating.
I think they should just go back to the way it was.
I'll tell you what, if it leads to quicker face-offs,
right,
then I don't really care what they have to do to get to quicker face-offs. But, I mean, less so this year. At least I haven't noticed it as much this year. But last year, when there were some games where they're trying to line it up so perfectly, and it's just interminable to just drop the puck. They're doing this what looks like, you know, some sort of artistic dance.
Or the refs try to, you know, they have that delay where sometimes they'll try to, like, fake the player out. Like, not try to fake them out, but they'll delay the puck drop and guys will jump and then they'll toss them. Like, it's not about you. Drop the puck. Let's play hockey.
But, Sean, do you understand my point? Like, if your argument against going back to the way it was, well, players can cheat. Yeah, they can all cheat. So it's not like one player has an advantage over the other.
Sure. Because just who's better at cheating?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't really fix it.
I think they should go back to like we used to do in street hockey where you just put the puck in the middle.
NHL?
NHL. And then whoever gets the puck at that point in time.
Yeah, I'm sure centers would love that.
I can't see. Then they can just cheat by, you know, you used to do it in street hockey. NH and then on L. Just smash the guy's stick out of your hand.
That
to take the puck.
You never waited until
I figured
until
it would be your move. A little dirty cheater like you over there, Shawnee.
I just think that the referees need to do a better job of communicating to the players what the new rules are. And I think they have to just maybe ease off a little bit with how many guys they're kicking out of the faceoff circle.
You know, it certainly, I think inevitably they'll loosen their standards just because that's what always happens. Remember, they always call, you know, tight, you know, stick penalties very tight at the beginning. And
Drew,
then,
sorry to interrupt you, but the slashing I'm okay with because players were getting injured. So I have no problem with the slashing penalties being called more. But these face-off infractions, like, come on, drop the puck.
When we come back, Mike Commodore is going to join us. Mike, of course, a former NHLer. Look around the league, chat up, Mike, as to what's going on. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. We'll be right back.
bottom of the hour. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Andy Noble in town. And then starting tomorrow night, all weekend long, you know him from FX's The League, Steve Ranazzisi in town. So you can check it out. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, former NHLer Mike Commodore. Mike, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Mike. Of course, we're going to talk about the NHL with you, but you got a new clothing line out there. And I got to ask you, did you ever think in your wildest dreams that you would be a T-shirt model, that you got your own face on a T-shirt there? You know, how did this all come about? And, you know, how does somebody go about getting one of those Mike Commodore T-shirts?
Well, first off, no, I never did see that. I never imagined my ugly mug being on the front of a T-shirt ever, period. But it kind of just came from Twitter, actually. I mean, I just kind of like to mess around on there and try and, I mean, maybe be a little bit informative, but mostly have a good time. And this in one thing that I did, I ended up doing like a podcast with Spit and Chicklets with Barstool Sports and Ryan Whitney. And anyways, told a story and people kind of liked it. So kind of went from there on Twitter and kind of kept going, kept hearing about this in one. You know, anyone's like going out and have a good time would be kind of the PG rated version of saying it. And yeah, it just turned out I was thinking about, you know, me and a couple buddies were like, hey, you should do like a T-shirt or something. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, maybe I should. Then I like briefly looked into it. I don't know anything about making clothes. I don't know anything about shipping clothes, nothing like that. So I was like, it was a little bit daunting for me. And then, a couple weeks ago, Sauce Hockey, they got a hold of me and they're like, hey, why don't we do this? Let's partner up and see if we can sling some T-shirts. So that's what I'm doing. It's actually been pretty fun. It's been a pretty good time. I kind of talked to them pretty closely about the designs and stuff like that. And no, it's been good. It's been fun for sure. If anybody wants one, yeah, you just go to www.saucehockey.com, and they're impossible to miss. It's just I think it's called the In One Collection, but it's all over the front page. It's really easy to find.
Mike, I was telling you earlier today, I've already ordered mine, and I'm just, tracking the shipping order right now via email. I had to make sure that I was the first person here at TSN 1290 to rock. We love you, so we enjoy having you on the show every time you come on. So I'm excited to put that on.
We're just thankful he has a new shirt, because he's been wearing the same shirt for the last 5 years. So, you know, we're thrilled you were able to provide him with a new T-shirt there, Mike.
He's getting something nice and clean, at least for a while.
at least for a while. He'll get mustard on it before you know it. But for now, at least he's going to have a new clean T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mustard, ketchup, salad dressing, all of that stuff. Mike, we wanted to start off by talking to you about last night's first ever regular season home game in Vegas. I saw you tweeting about it last night. What was going through your mind with that unbelievable pregame ceremony, the speech by Derek Englund, and then the 5-2 victory by the Golden Knights over Arizona?
Yeah. I actually sat down and made a point to like sit down and watch that. I mean, first off, I thought the whole thing was actually very, very well done. I mean, obviously with that tragedy, I mean, it's well documented. I don't need to go into all that on that whole deal, but I thought the Knights did a really good job of with the ceremony before and tying it in with the first responders and kind of having the players out there for sure, but you know, making it more, the focus was more about, you know, what happened and the first responders and kind of focusing on that. I thought Derek Englund, I played with him back when he was 25 pounds heavier and a rookie when he was down and playing in, well, I didn't play with him in Vegas, but when he would get called up to the American League. And like he said last night, he lives in Vegas, and I thought he did an incredible job of, you know, tying it all in about how he lives in Vegas and it's a big deal to him and the Vegas Strong and all that. And I thought it was really, really well done. And I mean, Arizona was running into a buzzsaw there. I mean, they didn't, I was kind of looking for odds on the game there and I couldn't find any, but they didn't really stand much of a chance. I mean, I'm sure that place was rocking. But yeah, like I said, I can't, I think the Knights did an incredible job. It was really well done. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't like corny or anything like that. I thought it was perfect, to be honest. And then the game-wise, I mean, the game was, you know, that's a game where, you know, obviously the Coyotes tried, definitely. But, I mean, that's a game where I think even most people would say, you know what, that's – if Vegas is going to win one game all year, which they've already won three, but if there was one game for them to win all year, that was the one that needed to be won, and they came out and the real deal scored a couple goals, and that was pretty much it in the first period. And so it was good. It turned out well, I think.
Mike, how surprised are you with what the real deal James Neal's been able to do? I know it's early in the season, but really looks like he's found his scoring touch early.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not surprised. I am a little bit surprised he's scoring so much so early, just because, I mean, I keep in touch pretty close mm-hmm. contact with him. I never played with him, but some golf trips and stuff, and we've ended up being pretty good buddies. But what went on with his hand, like last year, he broke it in the second round. So like the last two rounds, he could barely hold on to his stick. And, you know, how that kind of – it didn't work out so well with him with the physicals in Nashville, and then he ended up having to have surgery at the beginning of August or whatever the date was. So he missed most of camp. He wasn't even skating in camp, he was telling me, for a while. Like, nothing with the team, and I don't even think they were letting him on the ice. So I am a little bit surprised that right away he's – I mean, no preseason, no training camp come out, and how fast the start he's gotten off to. But, I mean, I'm not – so in that regard, I am surprised, but overall, I'm not really surprised that he's scoring goals. I mean, he can play. He's been a gifted mm-hmm. – I don't think he really gets enough credit. I mean, he gets a lot of flack online and from fans about being dirty. I don't think – yeah, he's had a couple little episodes. I like watching him play. I mean, he works hard. I mean, he plays hard. He takes the body, and when he shoots the puck, it has that tendency to go in.
Mike Commodore, our guest on NHL This Week. Mike, you know, last segment we were just talking about sort of the new face-off rules that the NHL has instituted, and Joel Quenneville was upset about them, and you've seen a lot of different players sort of speaking out on them. You know, from a player's perspective, if you've been allowed to, you know, get away with, you know, cheating, for lack of a better word, for, you know, really your entire career, year over year over year over year, and then the NHL tells you that what you've, you know, been doing for this length of time you can no longer do, and you now have to try and find a different way to win a faceoff. How difficult is that to sort of change your deep-rooted habits from a player's perspective?
It would be difficult for sure. That rule, I'm not like I'm a fan of adjusting the rules and stuff like that. Like, I think it's good. I think you need to adapt. I'm not a huge fan of that. I mean, it's of the face-off one. I mean, it's, you know, you want to keep the game moving. You want to, like, we don't need to be seeing penalties off the face and whistles and slowing it down. So I'm not a huge fan of it really that way. But, yeah, it takes a little bit of time. But, I mean, at the same time, like, I just kind of go back to when the rules completely changed. I mean, this is, whatever, 12 years ago now. But, you know, when they completely changed there after the 04-05 lockout, you know, those were a lot of big changes. I mean, you had to change the way you were playing, and they let you know in the summer. And I remember thinking, gee, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be able to play in this league anymore. I can't hook. I can't hold. We got to watch the interference. I'm like, I can barely skate. Like, I need these rules. But then once you get going, and it's amazing what you can accomplish when you have to do it, when it's like, well, if I don't change, I'm in trouble here, and this is my living. So I think it is an adjustment for sure, but these guys should be able to do it.
Mike, we can't have you on without asking you about your old friend Mike Babcock and the Toronto Maple Leafs. I heard you talking about the Leafs a little bit on Spinning Chicklets. They've scored 19 goals in their first three games. They've won all three of those games. They're playing the team that you were drafted by tonight, the New Jersey Devils. They're tied right now. But what do you make of the hot start to the season by the Leafs?
Yeah, I mean,
can you separate the Babcock from the Leafs?
Yeah, I will. I'll separate Babcock from the lead. I mean, it's well known that I hate that guy, and I think he gets way more credit than he deserves. And I think he had a lineup full of Hall of Famers and great players in Detroit. And he's managed to go to Toronto and get Austin Matthews and the cast of characters they got there, which is loaded from top to bottom. But taking him completely out of it, I'm not surprised. I mean, they were good last year. I was keeping track a little bit, as much as it pained me. Yeah, I mean, 19 goals is a lot of goals. I mean, but their lineup is stacked. I mean, I don't love it. I have nothing against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I really don't. I have absolutely nothing, but just because he's there. But the Leafs are good. I mean, and it looks like they're going to be good. I mean, they're going to have to pay these guys eventually too, but it looks like they're going to be good for potentially a few years here, as much as it hurts me to say it.
You know, Mike, I know you've played against Patrick Marleau. Was he the perfect veteran to put on this team? As you mentioned, it's full of young, talented forwards.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I played against him a lot. I can't say that I've never met him. I don't know him. I think he's kind of quiet, but I guess I shouldn't really say that because I don't know. I've never been in the locker room with him or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, I would say he is a good veteran to add in that, I mean, he's older. He's been around forever, but he can also keep up. I mean, that's why he's still in the game is he can skate. He's always been on the skate, and that hasn't gone away, which is kind of amazing. So, yeah, well, that was Leaf fans. I mean, whenever something goes in Toronto now, whenever something good happens in Toronto, I just get torched. So when that signing happened, you know, the Leaf fans are all over me about, look at this signing, and you said that Mike Babcock can't get any veterans and this and that. And I just left it alone because it's just I can't fight a battle against thousands of Leaf fans. But, I mean, it took a lot to get him there. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but, I mean, I'm a three-year deal, $18.5 million, and I think 14 of it is a signing bonus. So they had to pay him. I mean, that's basically buyout proof. But I think it was a good ad. I mean, he's been a good player, a great player for a long time.
So, Mike, you've played in the National Hockey League. You know, you've been a documented Uber driver. Now you've broken into the fashion world. You're a philanthropist. What's next? What's next on the docket for Mike Commodore?
I don't know. Maybe trying to find a real job. I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I've been down in Scottsdale for the mostly the last 3 years since I retired. I actually just bought a place here in Calgary probably about 3 weeks ago. I still have my condo down in Scottsdale, but I don't know what's next for me. I've gotten to the point, though, where I've put the golf clubs. I mean, I don't know how many rounds of golf I've played in the last 3 years. I mean, it's been awesome. I'm not complaining at all. It's been fantastic. I've had a blast. I've gone on every golf trip anybody invites me on, and it's been a great time. But it has gotten to the point for me where I'd like to find something to do. And I think most of my opportunity would be up here in Calgary. So I think I'm going to spend more time up here. Plus my family's up here. My parents are around here. My brother, my parents aren't like everybody's parents, but my parents aren't getting any younger. So I would like to find something to do around here, be close to family. But what that is, I'm not sure. I've been going on some like meetings and stuff with like a land services company, kind of an asset management company. I'm looking at anything and everything. Going to do a little work with the Flames, actually, a little bit of like Flames TV. Nothing, not Sportsnet or anything like that, but just a little bit of stuff there. So I guess just dabbling and see if anything grabs my attention.
You know, Mike, sticking with the Flames, Jaromir Jagr is going to make his Flames debut tonight. He didn't play the first couple of games for the Flames. What did you think about that one-year deal that Jaromir signed, and what are you expecting his role to be for this Flames team?
You know, he's one of the greatest players of all time. There's no doubt about it. He's straight into the Hall of Fame, obviously, no doubt about that. I didn't love the signing. Well, I shouldn't say that. The Flames need scoring. So when he gets around the net, I mean, he can still score. So in that way, I think it's good. I'm just not sure how it's going to work out as far as I don't know. I mean, he's getting up there in age, right? So I'm not sure. Like, if things are going well for the Flames and for him personally, I think for him it's going to be important for him personally. If things are going well, then I think it'll be great. But I don't know how, and I don't know Jaromir Jagr, but how's he going to handle if he's not on the 5-on-3, let's say? Or let's say he gets off to a little bit of a rough start. I mean, he missed training camp. He's 45 years old. You know, if things don't go well, how's he going to handle that? I don't know. That's the only thing that I'm kind of a little bit iffy about. I mean, if he really is going to come in and he's going to be good with the young guys and he's going to be a good soldier, and if things are going great, great. And if things aren't going great, if he's still going to be good to be around and not be a downer, then I think it's a pretty good signing. But if that doesn't happen, then I don't know. So I shouldn't say I don't like the signing. I'm on the fence would probably be the best way for me to put it.
Mike, is that more so a signing that you make for the playoffs?
It's like later in the season?
Yeah.
Or, oh, you mean sign him now and then just, yeah, maybe. I mean, but, I mean, how has he been in the playoffs, though, lately? That's the one thing. I just, you know, I just don't know. It depends where his head's at. You know what I mean? I mean, does he want to, what's he more concerned? And I don't know. I'm just asking the question. I mean, I'm a fan. Now I'm allowed to ask this. Is he more concerned about scoring goals and getting his cookies, or is he more concerned about winning? You know what I mean? Because those might not necessarily go hand in hand anymore. So that's kind of that's where my questions lie. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. Mike Commodore is our guest on NHL This Week. You know Mike from, well, as a T-shirt model. You know him from his NHL career, and you can look for him on doing some Flames TV work as well. Mike, always appreciate your time, and I guess on occasion we'll still find you on the golf course in Scottsdale, right?
That sounds good. Hey, I do have one question. How's Tucker Poolman doing, my North Dakota guy?
You're a North Dakota guy. Of course, you're a North Dakota guy yourself. He got into his first game on Monday night against the Oilers and did not look the least bit out of place. He was playing with Toby Enstrom, and they were certainly very solid on the Jets' back end, and he's going to be in the lineup tomorrow night in Vancouver.
He had a great Corsi, Mike.
Okay, I'm still trying to figure out what that is. In the next decade, I'll get it. But he looked good and didn't look out of place. I know what that means, so that's good. I hope he does well.
No, he played really well. He played about 14 minutes and was paired up with Toby Enstrom. And, yeah, he had a great debut.
And as Jets fans, with good. Their reasonableness, they have him penciled in for the Norris Trophy as well.
Oh, perfect. Good.
Mike,
good.
Appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
We'll do it again soon. Take care. When we come back, Mark Scheifele with an interesting article in the Players' Tribune touching on the five most difficult opponents that he has faced. Talk about that next. One final segment upcoming. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, one final segment this Wednesday morning here on TSN 1290. We remind you, of course, that the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be 9 a.m. on this coming Saturday. We get you ready for the Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes. They're going to do battle on Saturday night at Bell MTS Place, so you can start off your game day coverage with us, 9 a.m.
Another team Commie played for.
Yes, another team that Mike Commodore played for, Carolina Hurricanes, of course. You can get us ready here on TSN 1290 for the Jets and the Canes with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 9 a.m. on Saturday. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. When the puck drops, the place to be is Bernstein's Deli. They have all the games up on their big screen TVs. They got full audio. They got great drink and great food specials. Maybe you want to have a cold brewski with an Illegal Curve sandwich. You can do that at Bernstein's Deli, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's.
Yeah, and Drew, I'll be there tomorrow night hosting. We're going to have some trivia. We're going to have some giveaways. We're going to be eating some Illegal Curve sandwiches. So come by. It's a bit of a late game.
9 o'clock.
But it's okay. I mean, just go into work a little bit late on Friday.
Well, there's, you know, I just think if there's the Jets play late on a Thursday, you just don't have to show up for work on Friday. I believe that's how the labor law is written, if I'm not mistaken.
I've seen that bylaw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's how it's written. So, there you go. Ezzy going to be live at Bernstein's on Thursday night to get you ready for the Jets and the Canucks, so you can be sure to check him out there. Well, we'll see how maybe I'll make an appearance and join you. We'll see.
Do it.
Yeah, I might. We'll see. In any
now that you're a father times two,
yes.
I don't know, Drew. I don't know if you're going to be able to stay up. That means that you're going to get home at probably around midnight, 12:30. How's Laura going to feel about that?
She might have some. Well, it depends. I mean, she'll probably get a better night's sleep because I won't be snoring next to her necessarily. So that's a positive. But then if I come home and I disturb her by, you know, I try and be quiet, but you know, you got to rustle around a little bit while you get ready for bed. You know, she might not be as happy. So I guess it's sort of, you know, give and take situation there.
Do you have a MyPillow?
I don't. I don't. I have a pillow, but it's not a MyPillow.
It's MyPillow, but
yeah, it's MyPillow.
Go on MyPillow.com. Use the promo code TSNRick.
Okay. Do you actually have a MyPillow?
No.
Oh, okay. I didn't think so. But anyways, yeah, I hear they're very nice.
I sleep on cardboard boxes, Drew.
I'm amazed. Yeah, I believe that, in fact. You just don't have a pillow. You actually don't even have a mattress. You just have a box spring that you sleep on is basically how it works. Yeah. Remus has some, I think, a MyPillow. I'll have to ask Remus how
that
he feels
about it. That was Rick's wedding present for Remus.
Yes, it was. And I sort of wanted to steal it because I've heard so much about this pillow. I wanted to, you know, get my hands on one of them in any event. I want to give a shout-out, actually, while we're talking about things we get in the mail. I got a book sent to me, Whiteout, a Winnipeg Jets story written by Holly Preston. It's a kid's book, and it was sitting for me, waiting for me here at the studio, and just wanted to give a shout-out to Holly Preston and this book called Whiteout, a Winnipeg Jets story. A very nice gesture from Holly. I'll read it to my son and my daughter. So thank you, Holly, for sending this my way.
Drew, aren't you a little bit old to be reading that book?
Well, I'm going to read it to the kids.
Oh.
Or more accurately, the kids are going to read it to me because there's too many big words in it for me to understand.
Right.
So
just that's where the nice, pretty pictures come in.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, ooh, look at that. I'm excited already. But anyways, thank you for sending that book that my way, so I'll take a look at that for the kids.
Remember when you were young and used to get those pop-up books? I love those.
Yeah, it's pretty much, I believe, what you, that's what you call literature.
There's this dinosaur book that I had that popped up and... I really enjoyed that till I was about 16 years old.
I was going to say, yeah. Then you moved on to Archie Comics and things were better at that point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that Jughead.
Oh, you know, I think we've called you Jughead on more than one occasion, let me tell you.
Pop's Malt Shop.
Pop's Malt, yeah. You know. Were you a Betty guy or were you a Veronica guy?
Why did the Archies wear suits to movies? And why did every single sentence end with an exclamation point?
I'm going to answer the first question first. I think maybe back in the day, when the Archies were sort of, you know, really at their heyday, maybe in the 50s, you know, wearing a suit to a movie was a big, because the movie was a big outing.
Exactly, yeah.
Big, like, out.
Big evening.
It used to be if you went on a plane, you know, in the 50s or the 60s, you know, of course I was in my 30s at that point in time. So, you know, if you went on a plane, you'd wear a suit to go on a plane because it was, you know, such a formal event.
That's so uncomfortable.
Have you seen what people wear on the plane nowadays?
Have you seen what people wear in movies? I think the last time I was at a movie, someone was wearing a bathing suit.
That's, I don't know what kind of movie you were at that point. Maybe we should reintroduce that. Get some people to, you know, class it up a little bit. That wouldn't be such a bad idea.
By the way, Drew, there's absolutely no way we're talking about the Scheifele article. This is a throwaway last segment.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about Mark Scheifele's article in the Players Tribune about the five toughest players he has faced. That's clearly at this point in time, given that it's 7:56. We're going to move that to Saturday's show. So you can look forward to that on Saturday's show.
And
it was a fun article.
Yeah, and what I love the most about that article is how Mark Scheifele calls himself a hockey nerd, and he says that when he's on the plane after games, he's watching other teams. Maybe we'll talk about that Saturday.
He's wearing a suit on the plane. There you go. See, this is what I'm talking about. He's dressed up to go on a plane just like the players are. So why can't we dress up to go on a plane or go to the movies, you know, wearing a three-piece suit?
Have you watched Riverdale?
No, I know you have. In fact, you've tweeted about it on more than one occasion.
Fantastic program.
You are I swear, you know, before you were married, your life was so different than it currently is. Just so, so different.
Very different.
I can't even begin to articulate.
Well, I used to shower with a hose.
It's true. We have the audio that attested to it, that you showering.
Like a garden hose?
Yes, like a garden hose, animal.
It wasn't a garden hose. It was the shower hose. But the point is that I didn't buy a shower head for about 3 or 4 months. I was living the bachelor life.
No, you were living the farm animal life.
Yeah, you're living the barn life.
Yes. Have you not heard that audio, Shawnee?
I have not.
Oh, well, we'll pull it up for you so you can you can listen to that. Are we good? I think we're good. Okay, that's it for this Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Mike Commodore, Mike Halford of TSN 1040 and The Athletic, and of course, Lisa Dillman of NHL.com. In case you missed any of the show, subscribe to it via iTunes or Google Play. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine Winnipeg businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com. For Shauna Soar, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.